Hello, thanks for listening. All the music featured in the BBC series Top of the Pops playback and the Radio Luxembourg years has been faded out for podcast copyright reasons. However, the full versions of these programmes can be found on the Sean Tilly Archive Mixcloud channel. Hello, I'm Sean Tilly, and this is Top of the Pops Playback. Now, during the next hour, we'll be remembering a vintage edition of the world's most famous chart show with the help of one of the stars from that particular programme, and we'll be playing some of the big hit songs to feature in it, which at that time were Top of the Pops. So by listening to this piece of music, you know we're heading back in TOTP history to the 1970s. To be exact, the 4th of October, 1973. In that case, it's a great delight for me to welcome David Cassidy.
Thank you, Sean. Yeah, it's great to be here and revisit 1973.
This is no ordinary edition of the programme, of course, because it was the 500th. You didn't even make it to the studio. You only got as far as the airport.
Yeah, I remember that one well. Very well. It was an incredible experience for me. Flying over, I remember the walk off the plane when I walked down on the tarmac and all the cameras were there and they handed me a microphone and it was live and they went, go. And I heard, bring, 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 ding. And I thought, I really can't believe I've just flown 11 hours to be here. Sit on the plane for 2 hours, walk down, sing the song, walk back up on the plane and fly back to L.A. And the next day, go back to work on the Partridge Family. I did that.
Well, kicking off this edition of the program, before we get around to your performances, because there are actually two that they filmed for this edition of Top of the Pops.
Really?
Because it was a double A-sided single.
It was.
But more about that in a sec. It was the Osmonds and Let Me In. Top of the Pops playback. It's the 4th of October, 1973, all over again. Hello, it's Sean Tilly here. And my guest this time around is David Cassidy. And it was the Osmonds who were kicking off the 500th edition of the programme with that a new release. It was Let Me In. Alan, Wayne, Merrill, Jay and Donnie, a bunch of guys that you came to know very well. You were very familiar with them.
Indeed, I was. A lot of people thought that I was, or that we were very competitive. And I always thought they were really talented guys, and I knew them when they were little kids on the Andy Williams show.
Yeah.
But we started having hits around the same time in the early 70s, and you know, I think there might have been a lot more competition between the fans of David and Donnie or David and the Osmonds than actually between us, and certainly from my end. I wish everybody success.
Well, that Osmonds song was the music that accompanied the chart rundown, but this was the first studio performance on the 4th of October, 1973. Before we talk about the two performances that you made on this show, albeit on the tarmac at Heathrow and your career in general, it's Brian Ferry who got a new entry at number 23. It was his interpretation of Bob Dylan's A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall.
Hard Rain's Gonna Fall. Right?
That was the Dylan version.
That's right.
Hello, it's Sean Tilly here at the BBC. Top of the Pops playback, rewinding to the 4th of October, 1973. And David Cassidy here with me to remember two iconic TOTP performances from the tarmac at Heathrow Airport. More about that soon, but we've just been having a listen to Brian Ferry, A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall, his version of that song, and it was a chart entry at number 23. A totally distinctive performer, David.
Yeah, he had a very unique voice. I think he's a unique artist and always was. And I didn't know at that time, was he a solo artist still?
Well, no, he still with Roxy Music, but he went off and recorded this album, These Foolish Things, which was in a cover version album.
Huh.
And this was one of them. And he also did a great version of W. Gray's The In Crowd, which was a big hit over here as well. Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah, but still with Roxy Music at this time.
Yeah, they were successful at the time. No one really in America knew Brian at the time. He later had success, certainly with Slave to Love in the 80s. And, you know, he's very good artist, and someone I always had a lot of respect for.
Let's go back to the early days, right? Leading up to 1973, it was 3 years before that when you first became a big name in Britain because of this Partridge Family TV series.
Yeah.
Did it surprise you guys on the show that the series became so big, so successful around the rest of the world?
Well, the whole thing is always a surprise. I mean, you go in expecting to be successful. And when you finish the product and you get the kind of feedback we got, we assumed it was going to be a big hit. It just had the makings of it, the chemistry of the show, the idea of the show. Shirley Jones, Academy Award winner, great cast, great chemistry in the cast. And you just could feel that it was going to happen. And everybody was telling us, before I was ever on TV with the Partridge Family, I had been on TV and was already on the cover of those teen magazines months before. And when they found out, the magazines and the teen magazines found out that I was in the Partridge Family, they went berserk. Because I was already getting thousands of fan mail from my TV appearances. Once the show was sold and it was done, I had to audition for the record company and for the producer.
Was this Wes Farrell?
Wes Farrell, yeah. Correct. Yeah, who was a successful songwriter and publisher. He had written Hang On Sloopy. He wrote Boys, in which the Beatles recorded. He wrote Come a Little Bit Closer for Jay and the Americans. I don't know if that was a hit here.
Well, it's certainly a well-known tune. The McCoys, Hang On Sloopy, was certainly a big hit.
Giant. Yeah, see, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, a lot of things that were hits here were not hits in America, and vice versa.
Yeah.
So what you're telling me about the chart here on the 4th of October in 73, I certainly do know Brian Ferry. I certainly do know the Osmonds, and I know the song. So I'd love to hear what else is going on this show.
What about Tony Orlando and Dawn.
Aha, they were on my label.
Bell, yeah, Bell. That's right, on the
yes.
Bell label, yeah.
Well, Dawn was the original band, and they had Candida. And then apparently Tony Orlando stepped in and said, I'm the act, and I'm the show.
And he was the voice on this record. Say, has anybody seen my sweet gypsy rose? And it was climbing to number 20. You're listening to Top of the Pops Playback here at The Beeb. We're remembering the 500th edition of the program from the 4th of October 1973. One of two records that they had inside the top 30. The other one was their former number one at number 27, Tie a Yellow Ribbon Round the Old Oak Tree. They were performing that on this edition of the program as well. But that was the current single for Tony Orlando and Dawn, up Woodley Mobile to number 20 with Say, Has Anybody Seen My Sweet Gypsy Rose? The first of two, David Cassidy appearances shortly. David with me right now. So it was the beginning of 1971 when we started getting Partridge Family singles. Mm.
I Think I Love You was the first one.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't until 1972 when David Cassidy's solo record started coming out over
right.
here. But in America, it was going on from 71, wasn't it, when you recorded Cherish?
70 and 70, 71 when I first, my own solo stuff. But I Think I Love You was number one from weeks and weeks and weeks in America and all over the world, except here.
Yeah.
It wasn't a big hit here.
No, it wasn't, though. He got in the top 20. But
when you think about the record of the year in the United States, the biggest selling record of 1970, which was the last solo Beatle album and single Let It Be, it outsold Let It Be. And now that was a tough one for me because I was such a Beatle fan.
Yeah.
And I remember being at the NARM Awards where they gave me Record of the Year and a new artist and everything, and Paul McCartney was there. Now, he's like John and Paul are my heroes, of course. All of them were, but them as writers and singers, those are the guys. You know, they're the reason I became a guitar player and played guitar or became a pop musician at all. Now, understand, we're talking about the legend of the Beatles and this young kid, 19 years old, with his first single, and I beat out the Beatles. I get up on the stage and I'm like, ooh, you could feel the hush over the room. It's like, oh no, you gotta be kidding. And I was like, thank you, and I'm sorry. I was so, like, I was so sheepish. It's not like me to be sheepish, but I was that night. And I couldn't believe McCartney was there. Wow. He would never come to America unless it was like, you know.
4th of October, 1973, David. Think about it, right? We've had the Osmonds. We're about to get you on the show. And also the Jackson 5. Now, they weren't in the studio, to be fair. It was a film to go with this track.
Mm.
They were number 26 on the chart, and it was Sky Rising. Top of the Pops playback here at the BBC. It's the 500th edition of the programme that we're remembering on the 4th of October 1973. David Cassidy here with me, the first of his two appearances coming up. But that was the Jackson 5, number 26, and Skyriser. But you'd forgotten all about that song.
It's not one of my favourites, but I will tell you, anything they did,
yeah,
with the work that they did, I mean, Michael at the time was just off. I mean, he was in his own stratosphere in that time, I thought. I'd never seen anyone at that age have the kind of soul he had. And, you know, he proved to be everything I thought he was and then more.
Mm. I mean, this was their last chart single in Britain for nearly 4 years.
Mm.
And when they came back in 77, they dropped the Jackson 5 and would be known as the Jacksons.
Yeah. Right.
And, of course, you know, the rest is history.
Yeah.
And as you've talked about with Michael becoming such a huge solo star as well, is he somebody that you knew fairly well?
No, I knew them all, met them all in the studio once. I'd been at an event. Not until, I think, Wings Over America came, where I knew Paul and Linda, and they invited me and Michael and a whole bunch of people, Ronnie Wood and people I knew at the time, Dylan and a whole bunch of people were there that were very successful people were there. And I got to see Michael then, but I met him only once as a kid when he was in the Jackson 5, briefly. We were in the same studio, recording studio. And I went in and said hello to all of them. And, you know, Michael was very shy.
1972, when you started bringing out solo records in this country.
Yes.
Cherish finally got a release over here, but it was a double A side with Could It Be Forever.
Right.
But in the UK, Could It Be Forever was the main song, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, it was. And it's funny because in America, Cherish was the record, and Could It Be Forever was kind of a follow up. You know, it was the same way, I guess, Cherish was here. You know, they would play it, but Cherish sold almost 2 million in America. I mean, it was number one for me all over the world, but it was a big, big record here, Could It Be Forever. And I think a lot of it defines the difference in terms of musicality, musical style of each country and the people who actually charted and who decided, who made the decisions on what is the song we're going to go with, be it the record programmers, the guys that were going to put the records on, the people who at the record companies were going to decide, what do you think the audience is going to want? And it didn't matter to me because the album was, multi-platinum.
Yeah.
And the album was called Cherish, and Could It Be Forever, and Cherish were double A-sides. They had them in those days. I had a few of them. In fact,
you did, yeah.
This episode, I had a double A-side with Daydreamer, but on the other side, a guy I got to know who I loved his work and got to know and got to work with, sing with, and write with later on, Harry Nilsson wrote the Puppy Song. And I used to love to sing that song because it was really, for me, kind of tongue-in-cheek, you know.
Mm.
But the title of the next album, which went number one here, was Dreams Are Nothing More Than Wishes, which was the lyric from the Puppy Song.
Indeed it was. Shall we have a listen to it?
Let's have a listen to it.
Playback. It's the 4th of October 1973. It's Sean Tilley here with David Cassidy, and we've just had a listen to the Puppy Song. It wasn't yet in the chart that day, but it was about a week or so from getting released.
Uh-huh.
Of course, the following week it would come straight in at number 8 with Daydreamer on the other side, and within a fortnight it would be number 1. No surprise there, a David Cassidy number 1 in the UK.
Mm.
What do you remember about the very first time you came over to Britain?
I'm about to get off the plane, and I see all these cops and things at the front of the airplane. And I'm just in a jacket and, you know, my furry boots. And sure enough, comes back. Mr. Cassidy. Yes. Yes. I'm afraid you're going to have to come with us. What? What's going on? Well, unfortunately, we weren't. Nobody was prepared for this kind of thing. We've never seen anything like. What are you talking about? What's going on? So, here, I'm bringing this guy in. The guy comes in, looks at my passport, stamps my passport, and I go, don't I get my luggage? No, forget about your luggage. Never mind. Comes, takes me off the plane, and I walk about five steps, and I hear this. Screaming about five octaves above that. And they had just watched me walk past, I guess, one of the windows. And then I hear, go! And I start running down these stairs, down onto like five-story stairs, like these metal stairs. There are cops around me, in front of me, and I start bursting out laughing, thinking how ridiculous this is. AI house had no idea, none at all. This was long before cell phones. Yeah. You have any idea what's going on here? No. I get down on the ground, and in the back, there's a Daimler. I open it up, and as we're driving off of the tarmac out of Heathrow, there are hundreds of kids that are running, chasing the car. I'm laughing my butt off, going, what the heck is going on? Anyway, it was fantastic. You know, I'll never forget it.
On the 4th of October, 1973, on this Top of the Pops, we had a bunch of girls that were dunce to certain records. If those artists couldn't make it into the studio, their name was Pan's People.
I remember them.
Yeah, and they were dancing to, oh, you'll love this, the Isley Brothers. Number 25 on the chart with a song of theirs called That Lady. Show from the BBC is Top of the Pops Playback with me, Sean Tilly. Hello, it's the programme in which we showcase classic editions of the world's most famous chart show, and David Cassidy is taking us back to the 4th of October 1973. You had two number ones in this country, the first one, How Can I Be Sure, in 72. In 73, the double A-side Puppy Song and Daydreamer. We've already heard Puppy Song with Daydreamer to come, and being danced to by Pan's People, a top 30 new entry at number 25. It was the Isley Brothers, and That Lady,
so cool. And the Isleys, you know, forever. I'll love them. And the writing team, I always paid attention on the records to who wrote them, who published them, who produced them. And because I was into music.
Yeah.
And as I'm sure all of you were. And it was in those days when you had an album. The great thing about having the album is that you got to read about it, see who's playing on it. And I miss that. You know, yeah, is the quality better on a CD? Of course it is. You know, but I think all of us, if you ever had vinyl, you miss that, you know, at least I do.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. I can't agree more with that. Let's talk about all these gigs that you were doing around the world, right? All of a sudden, it wasn't just the UK and obviously back home in the States. You were going over to places like Australia, an enormous star over there. I mean, you have 56,000 fans at Houston Astrodome, Melbourne Cricket Ground in Australia, 73,000 people, right? To the point where they were trying to deport you from the country because of all the fan mania that was going on.
Yeah, the press called it World War III, and that really hurt my feelings because I'm just a guy, and I was only there once, and really had always wanted to go to Australia. New Zealand was the same. It was insanity. But because New Zealand's a little smaller and a little less insane, and I still love New Zealand and love Australia, but the fans there were out of control, and there was no doubt when I was playing these enormous stadiums and venues that were just gigantic. And, you know, particularly in Melbourne, I mean, the Cricket Grounds is one of, like, those Houston Astrodome, one of those legendary buildings that, you know, like Wembley. And also to play Madison Square Garden, where I went as a kid and saw Ringling Brothers Circus, and that was the most famous arena in the world. You know, to play all of those places was so incredible for me, and to still hold the record at Melbourne Cricket Grounds and still have been, you know, at the Astrodome. It was pretty heady stuff for me, and I'm still in awe of it in a way, you know, that I got to live it and I got to experience that kind of success, you know, that kind of fame.
Had it got to the stage, though, where it wasn't about the music anymore? I mean, surely you could have rocked up at any of these venues and just stood on stage for 2 hours, not sung or played a note, And that would have been good enough for these people.
I don't know about that. Maybe. It certainly wouldn't have been good enough for me.
No.
The thing that, the reason the Beatles stopped is that they couldn't hear a thing. People are screaming so loud. That's it. But now, they still yell and scream and stuff, not through the entire song. They listen to the song and then they go crazy, you know? But what's great about it is that their only difference is really they listen to the music now because they love the music, as do I.
Top of the Pops, 4th of October 1973, gave us Next, the number 2 record in the UK, from a bunch of Brits who did very well in America, actually, The Sweet.
Oh, yes, they did.
Yeah, they did all right, didn't they?
Yeah, they did, yeah.
Number 2 on the chart, this is Ballroom Pits. The Pops on the 4th of October 1973, celebrating the 500th edition of the programme. David Cassidy, the special guest on the show, flying all the way over from America, even if he didn't get out of Heathrow Airport. More of those memories to come. David has joined me in the studio. The Sweet, number 2 on the chart with Ballroom Blitz.
The Sweet, actually, I remember because I had heard them first over here and no one knew them in America, but shortly afterwards, very talented guys, I thought. Love Ballroom Blitz.
Fantastic record. The energy of that song as well, David.
It's amazing. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah, I loved it. I remember I was here. It was a hit.
Yeah.
I loved it. It was a hit in America, too.
Yeah.
Ballroom.
Yeah. Loudest live band at that time as well.
Were they?
Yeah. They could just about hear their music as opposed to you. You couldn't hear
it. I couldn't hear a thing. No. I couldn't hear myself or anybody in the band. I remember I turned my Marshall up to 10 and stood next to it with the full volume and couldn't hear it at all. I had my guitar plugged in. I can't tell you how loud it was.
Do you think there is ever a point where somebody can become too famous?
Yes, I think I was.
Mm.
I think Ali was. I think Michael Jackson was. I know John, Paul, George, and Ringo thought they were. I know it killed Elvis. You can't live up to all of that. So you have to have a very unique perspective, and you have to be willing to walk away, and you have to be willing to face the demons, and you have to be willing to look at yourself as something not just mere mortal, but also your weaknesses, your strengths, your faults. And I never walked around going, excuse me, do you have any idea who I never bought that.
Well, you didn't have to.
Well, no, no.
Everybody knew who you were.
But the truth is, I've known too many people who have.
Yeah.
Sadly, fame does not do kind things to people. It rarely makes you better. Money and fame rarely makes, especially young people, better.
You are going to love the next track on this Top of the Pops. They were in the studio and they were kicking the drums over. They were smashing the guitars and everything else. The BBC did not know what to make of The Who doing 5:15. It's the 4th of October 1973, all over again on our Top of the Pops playback. David Cassidy joins me in the studio right now to listen to those guys from the rock opera Quadrophenia. It's The Who and 5:15, a new release.
Mm-hmm.
What about that?
What about that? Quadrophenia.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, those guys were great. I got, you know, I've had such a blessed life and getting to meet some of the people that that you were always a fan of, and certainly The Who were fantastic, I thought. Really great. And Keith Moon was a one-off. He was as unique a person and as unique a drummer and everything else about him.
Should we ever listen to Daydreamer?
Yes, why not? I did it live there on the tarmac on October. Oh, my gosh.
4th of October, 1973. Yeah, your second song to be done on this Top of the Pops. And of course, it was just a couple of weeks away from getting to number one.
Thank you very much for flying out especially for Top of the Pops for our 500th anniversary.
My pleasure, thank you.
Well, let's hear the other song. It's on the other side of the record. My personal favourite, actually, this one. It's called Daydreamer.
It's that's the single that will go straight in at number 8 the following week, within a fortnight, topping the chart. Your second UK number 1, David Cassidy, double A-side with the puppy song Daydreamer, the one performed on the tarmac at Heathrow Airport for this edition, the 500th edition of Top of the Pops on the 4th of October 1973, eventually getting to number 1 for 3 weeks. But then you flew straight back to the States.
Well, I got on the off the airplane. I got on the tarmac. They handed me a mic. I sang the song. I walked back up the stairs, went back to sleep, and flew back to L.A. And the following day, went back to work on the Partridge Family. And if you don't think that's like a bad acid trip, you have no idea. But the idea that you have to fly 22 hours to sing for 3.5 minutes, trust me when I tell you, it's a big deal.
4th of October 1973, number one record in Britain. You'll have no idea what it is because the charts over here differed so much from the States.
I have no idea what it is.
It would not have been a number one record in America. It was the theme music to the TV show that was very big in the UK at the time, starring Barry Foster. It was the Simon Park Orchestra, second week on top of the chart, doing Eye Level. And David Cassidy officially cannot wait to hear this particular piece of music.
I can't wait to hear it.
So before we play it, let's have a complete rundown of the top 10 on the 4th of October 1973. And with that, say David Cassidy, thank you very much for joining us.
God bless. Thank you.
Descending at number 10, Rock On, David Essex. Advancing at 9, Joy Bringer, Man From Man's Earth Band. Rising at 8, David Bowie's Laughing Gnome. Nudging up at 7 for the Good Times, Perry Como. Angel Fingers, Wizard, X number 1, dropping at 6. Upwardly Mobile at 5, Nutbush City Limits, Ike and Tina Turner. Highest new entry at number 4, Slade, My Friend Stan. Heading in the right direction at 3, Monster Mash, Bobby Boris Pickett and the Crypt Kickers. Holding at number 2, Ballroom Blitz from the Sweet. The TV show was Vanderbilt. The theme was Eye Level. And it was still Top of the Pops for the Simon Park Orchestra.